Hello and welcome to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep minute by minute into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, John.
And I am Zach.
And we are back, starting this minute, halfway through a sentence.
Yeah, yeah.
It's been a while since we've had one of these, I think.
At least a week.
At least 2 weeks.
At least 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Certainly not me.
Yeah. Well, we are here talking about minute 77 through 78. And we left off, as I said, with that cliffhanger from yesterday's episode. Happy birthday, dear nephew.
Oh, very sweet of him.
Yeah, it's so nice of Vladimir to, you know, like have this super, you know, fun birthday for his nephew and everything. You know, who doesn't love just, you know, a little bit of murder on their birthday?
Right. Fate certainly does.
Big fan of it.
One thing that I haven't really mentioned yet that's a stark contrast to the book is that this is supposed to be a very colorful celebration. Like, they describe all the vibrant colors and like, basically parties that are happening in the capital city of Harkos. And, like, they gave the workers a day off for this so that they could all join. And there's, like, big, like, balloons and celebrations. There's all this kind of stuff. But it's a very stark contrast to the only black and white that we see in the movie.
Yeah. It was a very interesting decision by Denis to, you know, go with the black sun with the black and white. And I understand his
it works
his here. Reasoning to do so. Yeah, and it does make Gedi Prime feel like such a weird planet that, like, nothing should be surviving on. But, yeah, to your point about everyone being, you know, present and, you know, there for the Na Baron's birthday celebrations, the crowd in this movie is at this point going wild. They are hungry for more blood.
Yep.
So Lanville and Fade, you know, go back and forth, you know, a little more with their close combat and everything, to the point where, you know, Lanville is able to get his slow blade penetrating Fade's shield and rest the tip of his knife against Fade's armor.
Yeah. And while he's doing that, Fade just looks so confused.
He looks down and he looks up at Lanville and he looks back down again for a second.
Yeah.
And
he almost looked curious.
Yeah.
At it. He's like, this has never happened to me before.
Well, I think it's because, like, for the first time maybe ever, Fade is actually, like, given a challenge.
Yeah, fair.
Right. Because if Vladimir's, you know, attendant is so concerned about one of the slaves not being drugged, clearly isn't, you know, a normal behavior.
Right.
And we kind of will get some semblance of that with some of the dialogue and everything later on. But Fade, after, you know, looking at the knife and everything, you know, knocks it away. And we have a moment where both of the men are kind of winded and catching their breath. Yep. And one thing I think that's really important that is a show not tell kind of thing is we see the height difference between Fade and Lanville.
Oh, he's got a good head on him.
Yeah.
At least.
Yeah, easily a good head on him, which means, you know, more reach. So Lanville has, like, definitely not had anything going his way, yet he's still a competent enough and strong enough fighter, even in probably a pretty weakened and malnourished state,
sure,
to fight Fade off. Which makes me curious, like, what would a fully rested, fully, like, you know, developed Lanville look like in a fight?
I don't know a lot about fighting and martial arts and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But
Roger Ron does.
Oh, yes, he does. Yeah. I can assume that the height and the reach differences become almost negated when you keep it to close quarters stuff like they're doing.
I would imagine so. That's not my world.
Yeah, I don't know. So. That is pure speculation on my part. But when you're doing basically like trading blows that are happening a foot away from you, it doesn't matter how long your arms are.
Yeah.
It's just going to be, you know, who can move the quickest at that point.
Yeah.
And then having a smaller stature may actually be an advantage at that point.
Maybe. I don't know. Yeah,
who knows? write in, tell us if you know this stuff, please. Cause yeah, I would be super interested to know that.
If you're a, martial artist at all.
Yeah.
Let us know. Cause I can tell you a lot about like keyboards.
Nerd.
Before we step away from Lanville and Fade catching their breath.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I noticed when I was going through watching this scene, and I don't know if this is because of the sensor in the camera or the lenses that they were using, and I don't know if you noticed this too, but on the corners, there was, you could very visibly see like a distorted picture where what it looks like the edge of the lens was actually like being captured in this frame and everything.
Was this on the wide shot?
Yeah, it was on the wider shots.
Okay.
It was like a little distorted, and then it would just go to like all black in the four corners and everything.
So yeah, that is a thing that happens with wide angle lenses.
Yeah.
It is a vignetting. That's what it's called. But if it's a natural vignette, then you actually are seeing the edge of the camera lens.
Yeah. It just made me curious because like we talked a lot about how they were, you know, filming with IR lenses and everything. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if like IR lenses don't have as wide of a focus, you know, point as like regular lenses would, or
I don't think it would be
weirdness that goes on with that.
I don't think it would be that. I think it would be more of they probably have tighter light control on the lens. So you would probably be using some kind of lens hood to stop errant light from coming into the lens.
Got it.
And if you're doing a wide shot with a lens hood, the chances of having that vignetting and just capturing the lens hood is a lot higher.
Okay.
Now, this is from a very amateur photography standpoint.
Sure, but you know more about this shit than I do, so.
There's one lens that I have for my camera that happens to.
Got it.
It's like a 17 millimeter lens, so it's a pretty wide lens.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, if I put a lens hood on that one, it will happen.
Got it. One thing that I mentioned as well last week, but it's a lot more prevalent this week, is how in the IR film, skin kind of glows a little bit, and you can see mm-hmm. like veins and muscular structure a little more defined here.
Sure.
But there's one scene, there's one moment where the camera is behind Lanville's head at like a, you know, 30-ish degree angle, and you're looking at Fade's face.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what I was talking about on yesterday's episode, where like the uncanny valley of the black teeth and Fade's black eyes and the big brow and everything really like make him look like super fucked up.
Yeah.
That's the screenshot that
I have to remind myself that this is Austin Butler.
Yeah. It's
because he looks fucking weird here.
He does, and like, you know, the prosthetics really add to it. You know, obviously the teeth and the eyes, you know, being as blacked out as they are, make him look so weird. You know, and we joke about how you know, you can always have more Skarsgårds in a movie, right? But he does look very much like Bill Skarsgård as Pennywise here.
Yeah.
So like there's, you know, a little bit of a probably unintentional call to that, but it's that same like really fucked up looking like face thing that they've got going on.
Yeah.
Skarsgård,
big baby Skarsgård. Daddy Skarsgård had a lot of Skarsgårds.
Oh God.
So we, from the fight, we kind of take a step back and we cut to the box.
Yeah. The Bene Gesserit
box. The Bene Gesserit box. Finnering's watching this. She is looking super intent, intently at this fight, as is probably everyone. But one of the Bene Gesserit sisters from a little bit off screen says, you know, she asks, why don't they stop the fight? If they know he's not being drugged, then why are they even participating in this quote unquote fair fight?
Yeah.
And Margot Finnering gives a vague but awesome answer. Plans within plans.
The most Dune answer, I know. Honestly.
And that, it's just the most Bene Gesserit answer to that. I mean, it's
true.
It is just plans within plans. And then we cut up to Vladimir, and he's leaning forward and almost like he's like in anticipation. You know?
Well, you missed an important thing too. Mm. We have the very low, like, chanting beginning, and it's like a kind of thing,
right?
And it sounds really cool.
I missed that in my watch through, but it was it kind of like the Sardaukar throat singing a little bit,
or? Not really, because okay. It was more just like a longer tone rather than. So we talked about it in the Sardaukar episodes in part one, but I think it was broken up into structures of like 8 syllables or 12 syllables or something like that. Whereas this was just a very long held low tone.
Got it. Okay, cool. Some crowd work, you know, they're getting the crowd involved, and you know, it's a celebration. Fade looks up at his uncle very menacingly. I mean, every look that Fade gives is a menacing look, but this one is super menacing.
Well, especially the way that you have the camera angled with his weird, like, protruding brow and everything. Yeah.
And Vladimir then says something pretty telling, or not telling. It's just a very good line that he gives. He goes, "Show me who you are.
Show me who you are."
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
I can't do a Stellan.
I can't either.
No, yours is pretty good. Like, honestly, I think yours is pretty decent.
It's all right.
Now, I do not think that Fade can hear the Baron.
No, but he knows what...
He gets context clues, right?
Yeah.
So, at this point, he reaches up and he turns off his shield. And he takes the device off of his chest. Now, the Harkonnen shield devices are very different from the Atreides ones that we've seen.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like to be there's a different shield activation device for every style of outfit.
I think it's just,
there's no standard.
Yeah. I think it's just, you know, what do you want your model to look like kind of thing?
Sure.
Cause Vladimir's got his ring,
yep,
which I think his is the coolest looking one because it's just that ring that he can tap.
Yeah.
You know, Paul had the wrist one or whatever. Gurney obviously had the same one.
Yep. Duncan's is a punch activated on the chest. which is probably just a bravado thing.
Yeah.
but he takes the device and he holds it up. He holds it up for the crowd to see, "Hey, I'm taking off my shield," and he just tosses it aside. And
they go nuts.
They do. This is not something that is supposed to happen.
Yeah.
And even Lanvil knows that because he looks confused as fuck about what's going on right now. Fade kind of raises his arms in a very Christ-like look at me pose.
Yep.
And I love that. I was like, okay, he's getting the crowd to go, "Look at me, look at me."
Yeah.
And then Vladimir's next line is, "There he is."
Yeah. And he leans back and just rips a fucking fat one from his hookah at that point.
You think he can do the, you think he can blow like vape rings?
Yeah.
I think he could. Yeah. Yeah. He's probably doing cloud.
Vladimir Harkonnen probably hosts like vape, you know, contests. Oh, or whatever.
Hell yeah, dude. Just doing like cloud tricks.
Yeah.
You know, pushing the clouds. You know, you have.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would have to imagine that's what he does as an off time.
Yeah.
When he's not soaking in black goo. So Fade then turns back to Lanvil and we kind of get this like aerial shot of the fight. And we see the picador start to kind of close in on them.
And they do this really weird, like, hop-skip motion.
Yeah.
Towards, which just adds to their, like, weirdness of their movements to make them as
inhuman
as possible. Yeah.
Yeah. So their motions right here really, really reminded me of the Fawn from Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah.
They have such a Guillermo del Toro... like just motions and, which is Doug Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe Doug Jones was the Fawn in that.
Yes.
He had a number of roles in that movie. I'm pretty sure.
He was the Fawn. He was the weird hand eyes, creature. Like Doug Jones did a lot in Pan's Labyrinth and he's done a lot with Guillermo del Toro as well. Cause Guillermo del Toro does weird movies with weird monsters.
So. Right. But I mean, I think the fawn is, I'm just thinking of this now as we're talking about it, but there are very, very strong analogies to that character and these picadors that we're seeing.
Yeah.
So shout outs, cause they're both awesome.
Yeah. Go watch Pan's Labyrinth.
Oh, it's such a good movie. I'm gonna have to watch that tonight. So they are, I mean, there's four of them that are kind of circling in or closing in on them.
Well, there's four in the inner circle, and then there's an outer circle with four more.
Right, right. So they're basically coming in from one from every direction, north, south, east, west, around them. It's making the fighting area much more intimate and just closed off, because if Fade's turning his shield off, then they need to fucking be there for if and when things go south for him.
They got to do their referee things.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And the last little bit of audio that we get in this minute is we hear the Picador's language.
I don't think it's language, but it's just some kind of like weird chittering noise.
And it
really is.
Again, inhuman.
Yeah.
But it's just like clicks and chitters, and it's just, it's very weird. It's very, I mean, keeping up the theme of things being bug-like.
Yeah.
For the Harkonnens. So that is where we end the minute. Only thing I'm going to say about the books for this one is there is a lot of banter going on between the Atreides soldier and Fade in this moment. They're fighting, but they're hurling insults at each other. the Atreides slave goes, "Hey, Harkonnen, you prepared to die?" and you know, he's trying to wrestle the poison blade out of his hand, and he eventually
the one that he thinks is poison.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So they're exchanging blows, and it seems to be a fairly even fight.
Yeah,
up until this point, and they're. Actually, no, I'm going to stop there, because that is where we kind of catch up with the next minute. So I'm going to stop it right there.
Well, I have nothing else to add from Art and Soul, honestly, for the rest of the week.
Okay.
So
cool.
my extra credit notes stop there for now. But the Dune Minute does not stop there. We will be back tomorrow with another episode. In the meantime, you can find us online. We are on Blue Sky at DuneMinute.com, and you can email DuneMinute@gmail.com. If you prefer the old-fashioned way. We will see you tomorrow for a Thursday episode of the Dune Minute.
All right, see you then.